Hello! Welcome to the Rotten Horror Picture Show, the horror movie podcast where we talk about films off the Rotten Tomatoes 200 Best Movies of All Time list. I feel like I haven't done that straight in introduction in a while because we've been jumping around.
Good job.
My name is Clay. With me, as always, is Amanda. How are you doing, Amanda?
I'm good. I'm here with a few common household chemicals in the correct proportions.
That's all you need.
Yep.
Pay attention to this movie and you can learn how to build bombs. We are talking today about number 154 on our list. It is the movie Tremors. From 1990, which has an 88% Rotten Tomatoes score and a 76% audience score. I know you've seen this before.
Yes.
Because we watched it together remotely 5 years ago during the pandemic.
Ish.
Do you have a... Was that the first time you'd seen it? Had you seen it before that?
This is one of those movies that I feel like I watched totally out of order on TV. Do you know what I mean?
Sure,
like
yes.
You'd turn
this
on,
was a big TNT movie.
Yeah, like you'd turn it on, it would be two-thirds of the way through, so you'd watch the last third. Mm-hmm. And then another time, it was like before basketball practice, and you've got 40 minutes, and you watch the middle 40 minutes. And then there's another time
you
where
pick up some moves from Melvin.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, with the basketball. But yeah, it's just one of those movies that I can't remember, other than the time we watched it during COVID, when the last when the time before that I actually sat down and like watched through it had been. But I have definitely been aware of it since childhood.
It is a great channel flipping TV movie because you can really drop into this at any point.
Yeah.
And pick it up in about 30 seconds.
Yes.
What's happening? It's like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Giant worms. Yeah.
Trying to kill them.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. What about you?
I had seen this a few times. My dad loved this movie.
Mm.
So we rented this at least a couple times way back when it was first out on video.
This does feel like a dad's love this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It very much is a, it's kind of a guy movie, but it's not like an obnoxious guy movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's very, it's not toxically masculine. It's like whatever the opposite of that is.
Wholesome.
Productively masculine.
Productively masculine.
But yeah, so this is, my dad doesn't like a lot of, well, anything. And so anytime something pops up that he does like, I always make a note of it, usually because it's so strange.
Yeah.
So he loved this. Mm-hmm. And then for a while he was like, Clay, have you ever seen the movie Motel Hell? And I'm like, no, you got to see Motel Hell. And then I finally saw Motel Hell, which I assume we will do on the show at some point because I love Motel Hell.
Oh, okay.
It's terrible. But
I don't know this movie.
Oh, it is. I love it. It's fantastic.
I was like, isn't that one of those reality TV shows where they come in and they try and make your place of business better?
Only if at the end you don't get a better place of business, you get into a chainsaw fight with a guy wearing a severed pig head.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's great.
Let's do it.
Which
one of us gets the pig head?
Well, rock, paper, scissors for it.
Okay. Fair enough.
Then he had his knee surgery. And he was stuck in a chair basically for a week, and so he was just watching movies. And I came up, you know, this is when I lived at home, so I was working in the basement, and I came upstairs, and he had just finished a movie, and he goes, Clay, I think this might be my favorite movie I've ever seen. And I was like, what was it?
Oh my God.
The Breakup, starring Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn. And I was like, really? And
what?
I'm pretty sure during his knee recovery, he watched it like a couple more times.
Was he on pain meds? Like,
it's very possible.
Just in the right frame of mind for a Vince Vaughn joint.
So, you know, it deserves its own special place on a very exclusive list of movies that my dad has actively expressed his love of.
A highly curated collection.
Yes.
Yes.
But we're going to take a break. We're going to play the trailer for you, and we will talk about it.
Perfection. A scorched outpost in the middle of nowhere.
You know how close I am to leaving this place right now? How close?
Maybe that's why Val and Earl decided to leave town.
Oh, whoa, 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 whoa!
Hey, hold up. That's Edgar Deans.
They just picked the wrong day to do it.
Jeez. You guys better get the hell out of here.
mate.
I'll give you boys $5 for this. 20.
That's how they get you. They're under the ground.
What the hell are those things? How did they eat a whole station wagon?
But where do they come from?
I vote for outer space. No way these are local boys.
You see, they're headed right for us.
No Richter scale can measure it.
They're coming!
No scientist can explain it.
Bert, they're under the ground!
You didn't get penetration even with the alpha gun.
Run, run!
And no one knows what to call it.
Megaworms or suckers or suckoids.
Now this valley is just one long smorgasbord.
Now, it's up to Val and Earl to save the world.
That's one big mother.
Who died and made you Einstein?
And they know just what to do. Flip for it.
Damn.
Kevin Bacon. Fred Ward. Tremors.
Okay, Tremors, directed by Ron Underwood, written by S.S. Wilson, my favorite ship in the fleet, Brent Maddock and Ron Underwood, starring, this one might be a record for me.
Mm.
So we've got starring Kevin Bacon,
mm-hmm.
the guy from Tremors, because the other guy in this movie, Fred Ward.
Okay.
I only knew as, that's the guy from Tremors.
Fair.
Anytime I saw him pop up in anything else.
Yeah.
The guy from Tremors, the dad from Family Ties, the grandfather from Three Ninjas, the girl from Jurassic Park, the wife from Eraserhead, mm-hmm. and the Reba from Reba.
Ah.
Amanda.
Yes, Clay.
What happens in Tremors?
Repairmen Val McKee and Earl Bassett are tired of their dull lives in the small desert town of Perfection, Nevada. Mm-hmm. But just as the two try to skip town, they happen upon a series of mysterious deaths and a concerned seismologist studying unnatural readings below the ground. With the help of an eccentric couple, the group fights for survival against giant worm-like monsters hungry for human flesh.
Well, they eat cows, too.
Yeah, but they...
You want to pigeonhole them.
Definitely seem excited about the humans.
Graboid hold them.
Well, Clay, some things you'll find in Tremors include...
Yes.
The perfect woman checklist.
Yeah, I was going to write down what it was, but I didn't feel like rewinding it.
It's just like, she's got to be blonde. She's got to have boobs. She's got to have
world-class breasts.
World-class breasts.
I did
breasts.
Take note of that one.
I would like to know what the rubric for that is. Just out of curiosity. Peer-reviewed. Elvira levels, you know?
World-class.
Like,
yeah,
right?
Can't argue with that.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Why
would I think about that
Elvira,
with her beautiful form staring right at me from your t-shirt today?
And calendar.
And the calendar over your shoulder that regularly distracts me while we record.
And action figure.
See, she's kind of out of my line of sight when we record.
Oh, yeah,
I'm usually
okay.
Like facing more this way, yeah. But the calendar gets me every time.
Yeah, it's all here just to throw you off.
Staring off into space over your shoulder like I'm not listening to you. And it's because I'm not. I'm staring at Elvira.
That's fair.
Along with that checklist, a victim of circumstance.
Happens to the best of us.
You know, we all have all been there. The town of perfection.
Mm-hmm. Ironically, not perfect.
Not perfect. Mm. Rock, paper, scissors, also known as Rochambeau.
Is that the same thing?
I think so.
I thought Rochambeau was like something. I thought that was like odds or evens.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. Whatever.
Whatever. Fine. Rock, paper, scissors. A triple P.
Yeah. I mean, when you've got three people stuck on a giant rock,
yeah.
Everybody's got to pee at the same time.
We had some business to take care of.
Weird beat to put in the movie.
Yeah. Weirdly specific, since we're not worried about, you know, anything like food or water.
Yes.
Yeah. Quote, some Swiss cheese and some bullets.
It's the only thing you need when you go out on a trip into the desert.
Yeah, that's when you're going to get in your truck and drive for help.
Mm-hmm.
What else should you take with you?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's actually nice because you can keep the bullets in the holes of the cheese.
You can shoot them through the holes of the cheese.
That's true.
If you're a marksman. Or you can make your Swiss cheese more holy.
Yeah.
All right. You'll also find wholesome male friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They were a couple of Bert and Ernie's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very sweet. Pepsi product placement.
Yep. I would like to say it did occur to me that the reason that the old guy dies is entirely because of Fred Ward. Because earlier in the movie, Kevin Bacon wants to fix that machine. And then Fred Ward is like, we're on a deadline here.
Yeah, fair.
And then that's when Kevin Bacon says the quote, which I feel like is probably, I should put as like the on my coat of arms, which is, we plan ahead. That way we don't have to do anything right now.
Fucking Melvin.
Yeah.
Goddamn Melvin.
Yeah. I was a little bit sad he didn't get eaten.
Yeah, he seems like the character placed in the movie to get eaten.
It's weird because this is one of those movies where it's like, it's pretty clear right away who's going to make it and who isn't. Because it's like, it's not the type of movie where they're going to really shake things. It's not like a Final Destination thing where it's like, oh, anybody could get it.
Yeah.
You kind of have your, the only guy who doesn't die who I thought might go, or like, you know, my writer brain thought might have been able in that position is the guy with the guns, the dad from Family Ties, because he seems like someone who's gonna like blaze of glory,
you know,
sacrifice himself.
I absolutely thought he and Melvin were in for it, but you know, they made it out, good for them. Pipe bomb instructions.
Yep, as I said, pay attention.
Yeah.
If you can count how many grains of whatever that shit was he poured into that pipe.
If you
pipe.
Know what that shit is that he's pouring into that pipe. There you go.
Also, it's a good thing they didn't kill him, because they made like 3 sequels to this, and I believe he's the only person who's in all of them.
So. Just kept coming back. Yeah. And last but certainly not least, Shai Hulud.
The Shai Hulud. Big few years for the Sandworm contingent, because you got this movie, 1990.
Mm-hmm.
You got your Beetlejuice in 1988, 87.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got your David Lynch's Dune in 1984.
Yeah, just sandworms all over the place, man.
Then we don't see another sandworm till
Tremors 2.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Well, they get feet in the second one. They have,
that's so stupid.
I do remember that, because I do remember watching this one with my dad, and then he was like, guess what? There's a sequel.
Oh, my God. I don't know why feet on the sandworm is the thing that pushed me into that's so stupid territory.
Yeah, well, it's because I feel like they have babies and the babies have feet. And so you've got these like
evolution.
Little. Yeah, you've got these like little raptors with giant graboid mouths running around.
Oh, that's so dumb.
Anyway, Tremors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like, this is a movie that's, it's kind of hard to talk about.
Yeah.
Because it's good. There's not really anything wrong with it. It's just like a solid line drive down the middle.
Yep.
It's desert Jaws, essentially.
Yeah, yes. I have that in my notes, actually. Yeah.
And everybody in it's really good. So we'll see you next week, I guess.
All right. Good night, everybody. No, it is. It's tough to talk about it, but it's also, I feel, and I am probably wrong, you might disagree and come up with some great examples to disprove what I'm about to say, but I feel,
obviously,
I mean, hopefully, I would welcome them in this case, because I feel like this movie hits that niche that is so hard to find nowadays. Like you're saying, you're
Fred Ward starring vehicle.
Fred Ward, don't knock it. But like your dad, who is, from what you're saying, notoriously picky about the types of movies that he likes, liked this.
Mm-hmm.
People who don't like horror movies like this movie.
Yeah.
This is kind of a good-ish, like, intro to horror movies or, like, creature features for younger, like...
Oh, definitely.
You know,
yeah.
Your older kids, younger teens, like, that realm. Like, I feel like it's such a crowd pleaser. It was one of the movies we watched during COVID lockdowns, like, remotely with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was one of the few in that like year we were doing that every week when everyone unanimously was like, that was fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I enjoyed watching that movie. No one was sort of like, this isn't for me. I'm out of here. Despite the pretty wide variety of tastes.
Yeah.
I feel like we're kind of missing this now.
It's the
like
kind
an
of
adventure. It's like a simple entry point.
Yeah.
And then you have a fun 90 minutes where you're engaged, and you can follow what's going on without having to know any background lore. Mm-hmm. And then when it's over, you're just like, cool.
They also, thankfully, don't give you any background lore.
Right.
Like this, I was thinking, oh yeah, Desert Jaws. And I was thinking, oh, this is like Shit Kicker, A Quiet Place.
Yeah.
But then I was like, this is actually, I prefer this to A Quiet Place because there's one rule they figure out very quickly.
Yep.
And then they don't spend any time with a whiteboard saying sound hurts question mark. You know,
but I even like that there's a little bit of a kind of winking attitude towards that within the movie itself, where they keep asking Rhonda, like, so what is it?
Where did it
come from? And she's like, why do you keep asking me? And they're like, I don't know. You're in college. You're a scientist. Are they from space? And she's just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And they move on because they don't have time. They got to save their own lives.
That reminds me, I just saw the new trailer for Happy Gilmore 2.
Oh, Jesus.
And it ends with a face-off with him and Shooter McGavin. And Happy Gilmore recounts his line, you know, you eat pieces of shit for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff happens so often when they do these like sequels and legacy sequels and stuff. I'm waiting for one of these movies to use that as a joke where he'll say, you eat pieces of shit for breakfast. Cut to the other guy who's like, what?
Yeah.
He's like, remember I said that 30 years ago?
Yeah,
and he's like, why would I remember that? It's 30 years.
Yeah.
I don't remember what I had for lunch yesterday. Anyway,
but
yeah, they don't go into any unnecessary explanations.
Nope.
And like, you don't even like, this is such a good example of why that stuff is so often superfluous.
Yeah.
Cause like, let's say halfway through the movie, there's a scene where they figure out that it's like, oh, the nuclear plant around on the other side of the mountain has been dumping toxic waste into the water and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay.
A meteor fell out in the desert and these guys were on it.
Great. Does that help them at
Does
all?
Does that change your circumstance?
No. And it also, a lot of times when they do that stuff, that revelation will then somehow lead into whatever they end up doing to like defeat the monster, which always feels like a cop-out to a certain extent. Whereas in this, it's just a bunch of people being resourceful, figuring out the problem, and solving the problem,
and having it happen under duress. You know, like in so many of these types of movies, the thing that gets frustrating when you're watching it is that scene in the middle of the movie where even though everybody's about to get killed by the thing, they all stop to like talk about it.
Yeah.
In a not just in a like, okay, what do we do next, but in a like theoretical physics style way with like you said, like whiteboards and diagrams and shit. It's so refreshing to see a movie like this where, if there were giant sandworms attacking the town, you would just be dealing with whatever was immediately in front of you in terms of what do we have to do next? Like, they're coming up through the floor. We have to get to the roof. We're on the roof. So-and-so is in danger. We have to help them. Like, there's not really time to sort of have big philosophical questions about like, but what do they mean?
Yeah. Also, I love that they are remote enough in their little town that has 14 people in it that you don't need to explain how this exists in the larger world.
Yeah.
And which means no police.
Yep. No cop plot.
No reason for a cop to come in and be like, I can't get through to the station.
Yeah, they even deal with the like closing the road really neatly of just having those guys up there doing road work and having the jackhammering draw the attention of the worms. And then they destroy the cliffside next to the road. There you go. Avalanche.
Yeah. You're and stuck. It's very simple mechanism. You know, walk without rhythm and you won't attract the worm. Although I feel like these worms are attracted to really anything.
Sound,
but Paul would have been eaten real quick.
Yeah, no sand. What is it? What do they call it?
The sand storm dance.
I was going to say, is it just like the sand dance? The desert dance? I don't know.
I don't know. I would pay attention.
All the nerds are yelling at me.
But yeah, I think the other thing that that this movie's a great example of that we don't get as much anymore because there's so much riding on every movie that gets made a lot of times. Mm. This is a movie that is pretty much entirely character actors.
Mm.
And really shows you the power of a good cast of character actors. Because mm-hmm. Kevin Bacon is obviously the name.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he would... even at this point in his career, he's kind of still a character actor.
Yeah.
You know, he's done Footloose, so he's got that cachet.
Mm.
But he's not like Tom Cruise. You know, it's sure. like, he's not like a big name.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody around him is just a really solid character actor. You know, Fred Ward's really good.
Yeah.
I couldn't stop thinking he looks like he could be John Bernthal's dad.
Yes.
They have the same, like, punched in nose look. Tremors yeah. remake starring John Bernthal.
I could see it.
Where he can play...
the son of...
What's the character? What's his name?
Earl.
Earl. Yeah. He can play Earl, but like...
Earl Jr.
An emotionally shattered Earl. Because that's the only thing he knows how to play.
My father was eaten by a sandworm.
Yeah. Have you... You haven't seen The Accountant 2, have you?
No. I haven't seen The Accountant 1.
There's... So, The Accountant 2 basically... turns whatever they did in the first one into like a two-hander buddy movie
okay.
with John Bernthal and Ben Affleck.
Oh.
And they let John Bernthal like off the weird leash a little bit.
Mm.
And the first scene in the movie is him, he's like psyching himself up and you're not sure why he's psyching himself up. And then they pull out and he's in a hotel room in just his underwear, psyching himself up in the mirror, practicing a conversation that he's like really getting intense about.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out he's calling a pet shelter because he's trying to get a dog and the person doesn't let him get the dog. And he's just like emotionally shattered in a very funny way. But it's just, it's like he's very good at playing like tough guys with emotional problems.
Yeah. All right. He's cast.
Tremors remake. How have they not? How have they remade The Wicker Man, but not fucking Tremors?
I don't know.
This is like
somebody took a look at this movie and said, "There's nothing more."
That's
to say.
The thing. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. Yeah. It's kind of perfect as it is.
Yeah. Which again is part of what makes it so difficult to talk about. Is there's not really an in. There's not like a critical in, but there's also not. You know, Tremors is a great movie for what it is. It's a really fun 90 minutes in an afternoon
mm-hmm.
to like, especially it's a good summer movie. It's the desert. Everything seems very hot. But it's not a movie like there's not a lot of character development. There's a smidge.
Yeah.
There's a smidge. Not Kevin really. Bacon gets a little.
Mm-hmm. He sure does. At the end.
Yeah. But there's not.
Smooching.
There's not like. I don't know, big meaty themes to deal with.
Yeah, I was gonna make a joke and say that A24 should do a remake where the graboid is grief. But this is like this
but
is
that's just the Babadook.
That's true. But this is like the anti A24 style movie where it's like
yeah.
the giant worm is just a giant worm.
Yep.
The people in this story
mm-hmm.
are not a metaphor for anything.
Nope.
They're just a bunch of different people
yep.
who are all pretty okay with each other.
Yeah.
Just trying to survive.
Like Melvin sucks and is annoying, but everybody just finds him really annoying.
Yeah.
Everyone else gets along pretty well. Like there's some tension, but
in a town with only 14 people,
yeah.
they all get along pretty well.
Absolutely. And I find that weirdly refreshing in these types of movies
yeah.
because it gets kind of rote and boring when the plot of it is like the remake of Night of the Living Dead
mm-hmm.
where it was just like the second these two people meet they hate each other right off the bat
yeah.
and the whole movie is just going to be the two of them bickering and fighting and eventually something horrible is going to happen because they're so busy fighting each other that they have lost sight of the real threat
yeah.
right like that's
yeah.
kind of the trope for these types of movies. And this one really avoids that.
Yeah.
Like most of this movie is people coming together to help one another. There's a couple moments where people either don't listen or somebody is kind of shitty or somebody like, you know, jumps ahead before everybody else says go. But in general, this movie is like, oh, these people are trying to all survive together.
Yeah.
And they're trying to make sure everyone survives, which is nice.
It's not surprising to me to learn that this was it was co-written by the producer and the director
mm-hmm.
because this feels like the kind of movie where if this was just independently done by a capital W writer, they might feel the need to justify their job a bit and really get into, you know, the character relationships and all, and like the guys who made this movie are smart enough to know in a movie like this, that shit doesn't matter.
Right.
Like, you don't need to have a subplot about interpersonal relationships or something all the time. Sometimes that's great. Sometimes it's completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
And this one's just like, yeah, there's a giant worm and they have to survive the giant worm.
Yep.
Sold.
Yeah, the biggest piece of character development is Kevin Bacon's character Val starts the movie with the perfect woman checklist. And it is very specific. And he meets Rhonda and she apparently meets none of the criteria. In Val's
That's
eyes.
That's always how it goes, though. Yeah. You know, you're on those dating sites. You can fine-tune your choices down to the most minute, so I've been told. And then you can never find anybody.
Like a true expert.
Never find anybody. And then all of a sudden, you find someone who's like nothing like any of those things that you picked, and you realize, wow. That's it.
just that.
Just wow.
Yeah. But the point, his character development is that over the course of the movie, he sees Rhonda be smart and he sees her be athletic and kind of brave, and like she's able to survive because of the type of person she is. And I think it, you know, it impresses him.
Yeah.
And throughout the movie, he realizes and they don't make a big deal out of it until the very end, that he has been like shallow and that she's really cool and he should go smooch her. Yeah. And then he does. That's it. That's the whole character development. Like, we don't need to focus on it. It just sort of happens a little in the background.
Apparently, the original cut of this, they didn't kiss at the end.
Oh.
And during the test screening they did, the audience was literally shouting, "Kiss! Yeah. Kiss!" And so they went back and very quickly shot a scene where they kiss at the end.
Yeah, I get it. Like, this movie is the hilarious, like, it does that thing that a lot of movies, especially in the 90s, I feel like we're doing egregiously, which was the like, wow, look at how ugly these people are. And they're all like beautiful movie stars.
Oh, of course.
Do you know what I mean? Like they try to make Kevin Bacon less attractive by starting the movie with him pissing off a cliff and scratching his ass in his jeans. And just like, he's like dirty and sleeping in the back of his truck with some dude. And then they try and make the girl who plays Rhonda unattractive because she's in like frumpy shorts and
shocked
has sunscreen.
Shocked she wasn't wearing glasses. Shocked yeah. she's not wearing glasses.
Take the hat off and like whip her hair around kind of thing.
But yeah, it's nice though, because like I think that setup works well because Kevin Bacon's character very clearly is the kind of person who has never left perfection and so has probably never really met a real woman.
Yeah, not like a peer.
Right.
Yeah, like so, all the women around him are older or Mindy, who's a child.
Yes.
Yes.
And so, you know, you build up this expectation of what you think you want based on magazines and TV and stuff. Maybe there is a theme in this movie after all.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you meet an actual person.
Yeah, and then you meet a giant sandworm and you fall in love.
Yeah. The sandworm is a metaphor for
maturity?
Emotional maturity.
It's a puberty metaphor.
Yeah, maybe.
Excuse me. A24, call me.
But yeah, one of the things I really like about the characters is I appreciate that the old Chinese guy whose name is...
In the movie, it's Walter.
Walter.
Yes.
I think his name is like Victor Hong or something like that. Yeah.
Well, it's Walter Chang, and it's Walter Chang's general store.
Yeah, I just know him as the guy from Three Ninjas. Yeah. But I also know him as...
The guy from Tremors.
One of the guys from Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh.
I feel like this movie is sort of spiritually linked with that movie in that it has two central characters who are kind of like dumbass experts. Where they are, they're not like the smartest guys,
okay,
but they're kind of good at stuff.
Yeah, you know? Just sorry, I was like, dumbass experts could also be
experts on dumbasses.
Yes, yes, dumbass experts or dumbass experts.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, Jack Burton in Big Trouble in Little China is more of a dumbass than he is an expert. But these guys in this are they're not completely, they're not idiots.
No.
They have kind of like a Three Stooges approach to the world.
Yeah.
Where they get things done, but in this weird kind of goofy manner.
Yes.
And so they never come off as incapable or anything,
mm-hmm.
but they still are played for laughs enough where they're just very interesting to follow.
Yeah, yeah. And there is the moment where the guy with all the guns mm-hmm. kind of yells at Val and says, "Who put you in charge? Like, why are we following you two?"
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he even says, like, "You two fuck ups" or something like that. And I like that about this movie, where there is that balance of, like, they are kind of goofy and ridiculous, but they're not idiots.
Right.
They're not, like, doing things that you as a viewer would start yelling at the screen, like, "What's wrong with you? Don't
yeah.
do that."
Yeah,
like,
they're not that kind of stupid.
Right.
And I don't want to call them stupid. It's like, that's not the right word. But,
right.
like, the opening scene when they're hammering the thing into the post,
yeah.
he, like, keeps missing the staple.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
like, it's like a little mini bit.
Right.
Where it's like he's focused on something else, and so he's not doing his job. So it's like yeah. that kind of
even their spaciness. recurring arguments about planning.
Yes,
about like you never think ahead. You got to plan ahead. It's like, it's that kind of stuff. Like, they have a lot of practical knowledge and know how, yeah. but they're just not maybe very motivated to do much with it.
Yeah,
yeah.
How did you feel about the other characters?
I thought they were good. I think mm-hmm. they do a good job of kind of rounding out the crew in this movie. People definitely fit into types,
mm-hmm.
you know, like there's the mom with
broad strokes.
Yes. There's not a lot of specificity, but they also, I think, manage to avoid being totally cliche.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just pure cannon fodder.
Yeah.
Even the people you don't get to know much about them. You know, they still feel like, oh yeah, okay, this guy lives here too.
Yeah, I would say the Melvin, as far
fucking
as the
Melvin.
Characters go, of like on the page, these characters, there's nothing to these most of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
I think as I was kind of saying before, this works because these character actors are really good and can
mm-hmm.
like find interesting things to do. And so looking at these different characters and how they're played and what they have to do. Melvin is probably at the, like, I'd say he's second from the bottom.
Mm.
And the bottom is definitely the guy who gets sucked in through the tire. Because he's just like, he may as well be wearing a red shirt with a Enterprise logo on the side of it.
I do like that bit, though, when he gets sucked in through the tire. And then the camera kind of follows that, like, that it does that move, like, mm-hmm. hovering over the ground, like it's moving like the sandworm. But you can hear him still screaming underground for a little bit of it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's good.
You know, I don't know if I'm just getting old and sappy or whatever.
Oh.
I felt really bad for that couple who were building a house.
Yeah,
but
I did too.
Weirdly, and this is, I think, part of this weird sort of approach. I don't know if this is a conscious thing, but it's part of the thing that made me realize, okay, there's certain of these characters they're just not going to kill,
mm-hmm.
is when they... When you get to that couple,
mm-hmm.
when the guy gets pulled in, I was like, oh, that's really sad. But then they also kill the wife. And I was like, okay, well, at least they're together. Like, it's like that kind of mentality towards it, where it's like, okay, there's a bit of a consideration and a sweetness to this.
Sure. Like, they're not going to kill. They're definitely not going to kill the kid in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then they're also not going to kill the kid's mom.
Right.
Because then the kid would be alone. So it's kind of like...
Yeah, this is the kind of, like...
There's, like, an innocence behind...
Yeah, like, I don't know... Maybe we should save this till the end, but, like, I don't even know if I would really call this, like, a horror movie. Because there's not really a lot of high tension, even.
Mm.
Like, it's... It's kind of a big The Floor is Lava game to an extent.
Yes.
And there's like no real moments where someone has fallen over and they're like trying to get them. And like, and there's not a lot of
Walter Chang.
Yeah. I was going to say Ronnie Chang. Toby. Yeah. Toby Wong. Fucking Charlie Chan.
It's interesting though, because I think that this movie feels more like a horror movie to me in the earlier part of it.
Yes.
when they're sort of, you're sort of getting the lay of the land, literally and figuratively. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing, you know, it starts with them driving out of town and they think they're going forever. Mm-hmm. And they see the guy who's climbed the mm-hmm. electrical tower. I don't know what to call that exactly. That's right.
Electrical tower.
Sure.
Yeah.
That reveal,
high tension wires, what they call those?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But that reveal when Val has to go up there, and he's kind of grousing to himself as he does. He's like, I'm trying to get out of this town. I don't have time to get your hairy old ass down from this tower. Like, what's wrong with you? You must be so drunk. And then he gets up there, and you get the oh shit reveal. Mm-hmm. And I thought that part was actually very effective.
Yeah,
where you see this older man, and he's definitely dead, but there's no visible like wounds. He's just sort of blistered on his face. Like his skin is peeling and he looks scraggly, but it's not like he was, you know, like murdered and put up there.
Right. Right.
And I think that's a really effective image to have, just this kind of mysterious corpse perched in this spot with a rifle,
mm-hmm.
and then taking him down and having it be like, well, he died of dehydration. It's like, well, he could have come down whenever he wanted. Why would he do that? Like, that reminds me of more of a horror movie beginning. Like, I think that would have been a horror movie if it was like, you know, the 127 hours of old man Frank or whatever his
watching
name was,
him slowly just, die.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what you said before is really true. This is a great introduction to horror and monster movies,
mm-hmm.
because I very clearly remember, like, I watching it this time, I was like, yeah, this isn't really scary. I remember watching it when I was a kid.
Yes.
And the two things that freaked the hell out of me mm-hmm. were the guy in the high tension wire tower.
Yep.
And when they pick the hat up and the face,
yes.
That's a great bit.
It's really good.
I actually wrote a short story in college where I stole that bit.
Yeah.
Because it was made quite a mark on me. But
yeah.
And like, you know, so you get these couple scary bits, which aren't horrifying, but you know, if you're a young person, they're pretty freaky.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm just coming off of my Large Marge fear. Getting into Tremors here.
Yeah, yeah. I'm probably a couple years past being really scared of the scene in The Great Mouse Detective where Ratigan goes full rat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you do have this, once you get into this, the whole thing with the monsters, mm-hmm. it is this kind of game almost.
Yeah.
Where I think a younger person can key into this, the stakes and the strategy of mm-hmm. what they're trying to do without it having to be, you know, oh, this girl's mother just got eaten by a monster and now she's sad. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody's really sad in this movie.
Right.
The saddest person in this movie is the guy with the guns when he's like, my guns.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I had a beautiful bunker. I had all of this stuff. Damn it.
That bunker scene is great.
Yeah.
Like when that thing comes through the wall, it's very good. The special effects in this are excellent. This is 1990. This is the tail end of the golden age of practical effects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to start seeing CGI popping. I mean, once Jurassic Park happens a couple years later, it's completely changes everything.
Yeah.
But it's all really good practical effects work. I've always loved how they do the. When it's underground and you just see like the hump of dirt moving.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very cool. And they do a great Jaws kind of homage with the jackhammer. The jackhammer stuck in the ground and just starts zipping around
because it's
stuck
getting
into
pulled.
The thing.
No, I think the worms themselves look awesome. Mm-hmm. Like I love the way you first see one. Because it's wrapped around the axle of the truck.
Yeah.
And so you're sort of like, oh, okay. Is it just like a million of these little things like mm-hmm. kind of zipping around in the desert? And then you realize it's just like part of its tongue or whatever.
Right,
whatever.
Yeah.
It's like one small part of a much, much bigger creature that you then get to see later.
Yeah.
And I in a lot of kind of monster movie creature features, especially more modern ones, I tend to enjoy the delayed gratification more of like not seeing the whole monster right away or that early in the movie.
Yeah.
This is one of the rare ones where I think it works that pretty quickly you see one of them.
Yeah.
You know, like when they're in that culvert or whatever and it kills itself smashing its own head against the concrete.
Yeah.
And they manage to pry it out. I actually think that works pretty well because then, you know, they kind of can see the thing that they're dealing with and how far outside of the realm of normality it is and how much the stakes have just risen from we thought they were these little, like, you know, 6 or 8 feet long kind of weird snakes or whatever to, oh no, it's this huge beast.
Yeah, because the weirdness and the uncanniness adds to the freakiness of it.
Yeah.
And so if you spend most of your movie with just
piles of sand.
It's, you know, it doesn't feel that exciting.
It's gonna get a little boring. Yeah.
I've always loved the look. It's got that. It's like the worm body, but there's kind of like an exoskeleton to it, and it's got the big like beak.
Yeah.
Like the Sarlacc pit, kind of.
Yeah, where its maw kind of splits when it opens a little bit on the bottom, especially. It's got these like curved up like jaw pieces.
Yeah they've kind of got the big mouth like the dune sandworm. And I've always wondered,
like Shia Hulud,
if you're a monster,
yes,
a giant snake thing,
go on
chomping your way through the underground, wouldn't having a giant open mouth like that really hinder your speed?
But I think these ones are, they're kind of, they taper, right?
Yeah.
To sort of, like, when it's closed, it kind of tapers, and then those jaw pieces open down.
Yeah.
It seemed.
I guess I'm thinking more in just in Dune. The thing with the giant mouth, I was like, I feel like these things move pretty fast. I don't know how it's...
You don't think it should just have, like, a flat face?
Yeah. It seems like it's displacing so much surface area of sand with that flat face.
Eating the sand as it goes.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like a giant whale, right? Yeah. It just kind of opens its mouth and it all kind of zips through, poops out spice.
Hey, maybe these worms poop out spice too.
That's true. No. Who's to say? I love at the end when they're like, no, we're going to be famous from this. And the girl's like, yeah, I'm going to get to do so much science.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, so I guess they're going to bring it to the larger world. I don't think... It makes sense that the sequel would be Tremors 2, like Tremors in Manhattan or something, but I don't think that's what it is.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask, since I highly doubt we're actually going to do the sequel at any point on this podcast, you said you watched it, right?
Long time ago.
So you don't really remember what all, the basic conceit of it, at least.
Well, let's find out.
Oh, okay.
Tremors 2, Aftershock. Oh, Fred Ward is in the second one. I do remember that, yeah. Earl Bassett, now a washed up ex-celebrity, is hired by a Mexican oil company to eradicate a graboid epidemic that's killing more people each day. However, the humans aren't the only one with a new battle plan.
Oh, okay.
Directed by S.S. Wilson, writer of the first movie.
Your favorite ship.
One of the writers, yes. Decommissioned, unfortunately.
Oh,
he also wrote Short Circuit. That's fun.
Huh.
And Wild Wild West. Can't all be winners.
Yeah. How do you feel about the fact that the worms seem to learn as they go?
Whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I was okay with it. When they're sort of like going through the town and they're like testing the barriers and kind of like they know there's living stuff here that they want to eat. And so they're poking at the defenses and trying to figure out, you know, where do they got to go? And what do they have to destroy in order to eat these people? They kind of lost me when the final worm spits the bomb back at them.
Yeah, that's a bit much. Yeah.
It's like, if these things can get that smart that fast, they're going to take over the world and kill everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate it because that's a fun bit.
Oh, it's hilarious.
Yeah, but like, it is... I mean, that's when you're crossing more into like a slapstick comedy movie.
Yeah,
that's like
exactly.
That's like a Naked Gun bit.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Make sure it's still going here.
I think we're fine.
We're good.
Good.
I always get frustrated when animals or creatures do human things. And I don't mean like, you know, in Bambi where they talk and stuff. But like, you can always, it, it always takes me out of it because when they have like a CGI deer or something that reacts to something in a way, you just know deer aren't going to react that way. It very much is, you can feel the hand of the director or the animator making, giving it like a human double take or something, you know, something like that. Or and they do it with insects a lot where it's like the insect, and where like a giant bug or whatever will crawl up to your face and just go.
Yeah.
Bugs like, don't do that.
It's going to menace you now. And it's like, it would just either bite me or leave. Like it doesn't care.
Yeah. And it's, it always makes me feel like, all right, now you can really just feel the hand of the writer.
Yeah. Of a human, of a human behind a non-human creature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in this, doesn't really bother me.
Yeah. I was the only
Who's
that was
to say?
My objection though.
Who's to say how smart a graboid is?
Not me.
Thank you.
I am not a graboidologist. But I am saying for, you know, argument's sake in the movie.
Yeah.
Is that pushing it just a tiny bit too far to the point where you start thinking like, wait a minute.
Well, yeah, because they do, most of the stuff they do is relatively believable as far as the kind of learning they do.
Right, like if you were, obviously it's not realistic, but if you somehow found yourself in this situation with these creatures, everything that happens from that moment on in this movie feels like, yeah, okay, I could see that. If somehow these things were like willed into existence in the real world, like I believe that this is how a very tiny town in the middle of nowhere might react.
Yeah.
And then there's that moment when it spits back the bomb and you're just like, oh come on, really?
Going back to Jaws, I feel like most of the let's say decisions made by the graboids are kind of in line with as supernatural as Jaws gets. Even though Jaws obviously real animal, these things not.
Yes.
But like they play it relatively realistic as far as how much they can, how smart they are and what they're doing to try and test things.
Yeah.
And what you're saying at the end is like, it's like at the end of Jaws, if Jaws spit out the tank.
Right.
And it's like, oh.
Yeah.
And like spit out the tank and hit Richard Dreyfuss in the face with it.
Right. And then it went na-na-na-na-na-na.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it just feels like just a smidge too far.
Yeah. How did you feel about the way that they get the last one by driving him off a cliff?
You know, I kind of like it. I think it works because I mean it's a fun bit to have them back at the cliff that he was pissing over at the beginning of the movie.
The hero's journey.
Yes. All there and back again, as Bilbo Baggins would say. But I also like that they sort of set it up earlier on in that moment when they're in the culvert and it's chasing them and it's chasing them and it's like so zeroed in on them and it's going so fast that it either cannot recognize the barrier in front of it, doesn't care about the barrier in front of it, or once it catches that much momentum, it like can't stop itself quick enough. So it just smashes into it and it kills itself. So I think it makes sense. Like, I like that they set that up earlier on, that that's possible, that these things get so fixed on their prey to the detriment of its awareness everywhere else. And that might lead it to, that's a weakness.
Yeah.
You know?
I forgot about that when I was watching it. And so when at the end, I was like, is this thing really that dumb that it would just drive itself off a cliff?
It is kind of tough to have that happen so quickly after the I'm gonna spit this pipe bomb back at you moment where it's so smart, and then they're like, you know, like they've right before that they've worked together to dig a underground
ditch they dig a tiger pit to trap the truck,
and then they're spitting bombs back at them, so they're like, it is probably the weakest part of the movie where they go from that smart back to kind of how they were an hour ago.
But to your point, they do set it up that you know, there is a certain kind of laser focus, and it is funny because as I was watching it though, I'm like, what they're doing, their plan is actually, this really shouldn't work because Kevin Bacon stands at the edge of the cliff completely still, and then the other two run away.
Right.
So there's no reason, like, and they're doing the thing like he's, like if it was a bull,
right, you know,
where he's like waiting for the last second. It's like, well, you're not moving.
Right.
So you're not drawing it towards you anymore. The other two are running away. What it should have been the three of them just like doing jumping jacks or something, you know, wait. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's, so this is kind of.
F.
Yeah. But this is sort of the difficult thing when talking about this movie is that it's so much fun and is a, as a monster escape kind of survival movie, it works so well and is so enjoyable to watch that poking holes in it like this doesn't feel, I don't know, just doesn't feel like there's a point to it. Like, you know, I can try and poke these little, like, well, they made the worm do this.
Yeah.
That's not, you know.
I've had these conversations. I know you've been present for some of them.
Yes.
And it does get very frustrating when it's like, yeah, this is really fun. And then, well, but what about this thing that makes it stupid? It's like,
right.
This, fine.
Yeah.
Fine. Yeah. Right. I guess it ruins the whole movie because the graboid.
Because Kevin Bacon stood still at the edge
Kevin
of the
cliff. Yeah, Kevin Bacon stood. Oh, well, the rules are set up and breaks the rules. Give him a fucking break.
So now throw the whole movie out, right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Which is not what we aim to do here, but
no.
I am trying to fill an hour-long podcast.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking at the thing going like, this would be a short one. But yeah, I mean, it's tough because, you know, I feel like we've had movies where we haven't had much to say because there wasn't really anything there.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, it's like, yeah, it's all there. Like, it's just it's just good. It's it's you know, if it's a you throw it on in the middle of the day, you're probably going to watch the whole thing.
If you know, like, a 12-year-old who hasn't seen this.
Yeah.
And they're into anything adjacent to this, this is the perfect movie to be like, here you go.
If they if your 12-year-old has just or like you said, if you know a 12-year-old.
I don't know. I know some other
people. If you find a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
And you bring
and you trap him or her. Them. No, don't do that.
Off the street.
Please don't.
By saying, hey, kid, I got a graboid in this van.
You are going to get arrested.
Yes. Yeah. If you have a 12-year-old who has seen.
See, saying if you have a 12-year-old sounds worse somehow.
Well, it could be yours. It doesn't have to be a foundling or a stolenling. If you have a 12-year-old who's just watched Jaws.
Yes.
And doesn't want to go in the water.
Yeah.
Have them watch Tremors and then they'll want to go into the water because they won't want to go into the desert.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just bring them to a lake.
Yeah.
And then show them Friday the 13th.
Yeah. It's like a.
How to ruin your child in three movies.
Is it a. Is it an eight ball? What's the drug term? Speedball? What's the one where it's like it's cocaine and it's heroin, so it's like an upper and a downer, and so you just get like fucked up in the middle?
I think it's what Chris Farley died of. Oof.
Yeah.
I'm not cool or funny enough to know what this is in that case.
We could talk about celebrity drug-related deaths for the next 10 minutes.
No. Talk about Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, you know, it's I was reading that he went on quite a journey as far as his relationship with this movie was, because when he was shooting it, the only reason he did the movie was because he had just gotten married and his wife was pregnant and he was really depressed that he was in a movie about giant worms. And so after the filming of it, he basically disowned it and he didn't talk about it and kind of pretended it didn't exist for many years, but has since come back around and said that it's the most fun he's ever had on a film set making a movie, and that he doesn't watch a lot of movies he's in, or I guess I should say there are a lot of movies he has done that he has never watched, and this is one that he has watched many times and loves. So it's always fun.
It's heartwarming.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by being able to say, I find we're in this interesting period of a lot of our classic favorite actors are getting older to the point where so many of them had such curated choices
mm-hmm.
where it's like, well, I don't want to get pigeonholed as this. I don't want to get pigeonholed as that. But then at a certain age, whether it's calculated or not,
mm-hmm.
they're like, yeah, I mean, it's fine. I'll play Batman again. Whatever.
Yeah. Liam Neeson will do the remake of Naked Gun.
Yeah. I mean, that's, ooh, can't wait for that. But like, you know, it's one of those things I think about. It's like, well, so did Michael Keaton always know that he had returning to Batman in the back pocket if he wanted to? It didn't really work out,
probably,
I think, the way he wished it would have. But, I mean, he still got paid. He doesn't give a shit.
But I'm also guessing that, like, in that specific example, you assume for something like Batman, you're going to age out of that.
Yeah.
You know, you think at some point, oh, I'm going to be too old. There's no way they'd ever want me in a Batman movie ever again. Like, I'm never going to do that again. So I don't even have to think about it.
I do think it's a different era, too, because... Mm-hmm. You know, up through the early 90s and probably not really until the 2000s, that stuff was, you could still really easily get pigeonholed.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, poor Christopher Reeve made 4 Superman movies and basically anything else he did was not really that well received.
Yeah.
And, so I understand why people like Michael Keaton are like, well, I'll do 2 of these and then.
Yeah.
You know, or Harrison Ford is like, well, okay, I'm done with Star Wars. And but it is, I do find it interesting when people who have, like, clearly they have a track for their career in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I guess succeed to the point where they kind of, like, go back and, you know, are more open to returning or revisit. Like, the fact that Harrison Ford did another Blade Runner movie was fucking crazy.
Didn't he hate doing the first one?
Yeah, he did not like doing that movie.
Yeah. But I think you're right. I think there's
Star Wars, too.
Yeah, yeah. But it's partially, you know, I think Hollywood functions very differently.
Mm.
And then it is also a function of the actor in question's age, right? Like, Kevin Bacon can look back at this movie as a successful actor who's still working and doing things that he wants to do, and he can I'm not talking financially, but I mean, like, emotionally afford to look back at this movie now with fondness.
Yeah.
Whereas if this really had been like the end of his career, if it had been all downhill after Tremors, he probably would look back at Tremors and be like, fuck that movie. I hate that movie. But yeah, A24 reboot of Tremors starring Kevin.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if he ended up having like a Jamie Lee Curtis, relationship with Tremors where it's like, did you know that Kevin Bacon has starred in the Tremors movie across 4 decades?
Yeah. Four different versions of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. See, there's Tremors, Tremors 2, Tremors 3, and then Tremors, just Tremors again. And then,
and it happens actually in between 2 and 3?
Yes.
Not after 3?
And then there's the remake, the first remake that was just called Tremor.
Because it's only one worm.
Because it's just one.
We need to end this episode. Yeah. We're getting off
this
rails.
Does. I was thinking about, I do have a rule when it comes to sequels, so it doesn't apply to this, but I was thinking about it, which is... If you have a monster movie and you have a sequel, you have 2 choices with what to do with your monster. You can either have more of them, or they can be harder to kill, but you can't do both because it's too hard.
Mm.
So, because it happens all the time. Whenever you get a sequel, like Alien, the alien in Alien, unkillable.
Yeah.
Could not get a single shot in.
You have to launch it into the vacuum of space. Yeah.
As soon as there's like more than 5 of them, a couple bullets and they explode.
Yeah.
You know, it's, they turn into the bugs.
Yeah. 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 Are you saying that in Tremors 2?
I bet that's what they do. Yeah.
There's even more.
Especially once they start graboids. Like having little chicken legs. I bet they just explode them pretty easily.
So stupid. I can't get over it. Anyway.
They did it. They did it. The one of the ones that always stood out to me is in the final season of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Mm.
There was like this proto vampire that showed up that was like unkillable.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the season there was like 25 of them that she was just killing as easy as she's killed anything.
Yeah.
But you know, I guess you can't be too powerful.
Nope.
But
nope.
Yeah, I got nothing else to say. This is number 154 on our list. How do you feel about that placement? Do you want to keep it on the list?
I think it I think it stays on the list. I don't know. Because I don't know what else it is. It's not a sci-fi movie, you know?
Yeah.
And it's too weird. Like, you've got these creatures that come out of nowhere. So that's not just like an action movie.
Right.
You know? Yeah. If it's got to go in a genre, I feel like horror is its only home. Mm. And these guys do, you know? The Graboids murder a bunch of people.
They do, yeah.
Sometimes just by being passive observers of their gradual dehydration. But I don't know. This one's hard. I have such an affection for this movie. I think it really reminds me of like summer vacation as a kid.
Yeah.
I think I would leave it on. I think I'd put it closer to 200.
Agree.
Yeah.
I think if I'm putting it on at all, it's probably more for nostalgic reasons.
Yeah, and the idea of like being 10 years old and watching this and being terrified of sand.
Yeah, that being said, I mean, it's a good monster movie.
Yeah.
You know, these things are easy to screw up and they manage to do it pretty well. And
yeah, and I really can't overstate how good the monsters look.
Yeah.
When you think about, like we were saying earlier, if this was remade and the levels of CG that could have been used, like if it had been remade sometime between 1995 like
15 years ago,
2010,
I bet it would look pretty good now. I bet they could do some good stuff.
You could probably there would be reason and opinion.
Yeah,
would prevail.
It would cost $400 million because of all the sand rendering they had to do. Though
it would just they'd Dune. Be like, no, we're just going to make another Dune.
Yeah, movie. Just That's I fine. Mean, we got the we're, models.
Yeah, we
just put a beak on that thing. You're good to go. I've always wondered, and I think the answer to this is yes, but I've always wondered if special effects houses just have people who their job is animals, and it's just it's not like we need to make some animals for this movie. It's like we need you to make animals just so we have the elements.
Oh.
So it's like ILM has a guy who does like different types of deer and elk or something like that. And so every couple years he goes back in and tweaks them and I don't know if that's
how
that works.
We've got to call the marmot guy.
Yeah. I don't know if that's how that works or if they do have to fabricate them brand new for everything. No, what I'm saying is there should be a Graboid guy just in case.
Just in case. A sandworm.
Yes.
All right. We can give them all sandworms.
Yes.
Writ large. Yeah.
Yes. Very large. They're very big.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if I'm keeping it on. I'm keeping it on my personal list, probably. But
yeah.
Because, you know, this didn't. I think it's an interesting one to keep on there only because it didn't do very well when it came out. But it did really well on video.
Yes.
And this is like a really key. 1990 is a perfect era for something to do very well on video.
Mm-hmm.
And this feels like it doesn't feel like a straight to video movie, but like. It makes sense that this did well on video.
Yes.
As opposed to the theater.
Yeah, that this maybe wouldn't draw in huge crowds to the actual movie theater. But when people saw it as an option to watch over the weekend, went, why the hell not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to do it for Tremors. We are more or less back on track with our usual bullshit here. So I'm going to hit the randomizer button. Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, 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 beep, boop. And next time, we will be doing number 198, which is a werewolf movie that I have been constantly asked about by many people over the years.
Oh.
Have you seen Dog Soldiers?
Oh.
And the answer is no, but the answer will soon be yes.
There we go.
That's what we're doing next time.
This is Clay's character growth.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to kiss those werewolves on the mouth. Thank you guys for listening. If you want to help support the show, I got to start saying this at the beginning because I don't think anybody makes it this far.
Probably not.
Or
at least hold off the next movie announcement until after you've done it.
Yeah. I'm bad at this. you don't have a boss. You can fail as much as you want. If you want to help support the show, head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile. Where Amanda and I are covering reboots and remakes.
Mm-hmm.
We just put up our coverage of the Wicker Man remake for the month of May.
The Knicker Man.
The Knicker Man, which was quite an experience.
Yep.
That I feel like I don't ever have to have again.
Correct.
And this month in June, we will be doing
Amityville Horror.
Amityville Horror.
Yes.
This is Amanda's going to need to bring a fan with her to keep herself mm-hmm. from getting too
fainting.
Flustered.
Yes. I'll bring my fainting couch.
Anyway. Yep. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.